From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Donvan. This is The Connection, and this is The Sound of Genius. The Jupiter Symphony by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, his last symphony written when he was 32 years old. His first works, according to his father, were an Andante and an Allegro written when he was only 5 years old. Mozart is probably our poster boy for child prodigy, prodigiously talented, amazingly creative, and given the chance, some would say forced by his father, to share that talent with the paying public. And probably there were some people then as now who said, why didn't he just give the kid a chance to be a kid? Connection listeners, what do you think is the best way to nurture a child who has exceptional talents? And do very bright kids get the special treatment that they need in schools? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call to join our conversation. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or join us online at theconnection.org. Joining me in the studio is Ellen Winner, a professor of psychology at Boston College and author of Gifted Children, Myths and Realities. And on the line from Goldsboro, North Carolina, is Christian Peel. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Christian, hello. I know that you had a birthday last week, just turning 14 years old, and you finished eighth grade this morning. And I also know that next month you are on your way to college. No high school for you. No high school. So what happened? Tell us how this all came about.
Well, 2 years ago, when I was in the seventh grade, I took the SAT, and I made a 1030 on the SAT, and different colleges received my scores, and Mary Baldwin College happened to be one of the colleges that received them, and I was recruited by Mary Baldwin College. They sent me information about the college. They asked me if I would like more information about them, about their history, and about their curriculum and their programs. And, of course, I agreed.
And well, why is that of course?
Excuse me?
Why do you say, of course I agreed? Did you have to think about it a little bit?
At first, I was a little reluctant. I was scared. I didn't want to be, you know, I just didn't want to jump into something and I had no idea what it was. But the more and more that I read about Mary Baldwin and I found out about the program and I sort of interviewed myself, then I figured out that I think this would be the best route for me to go, because this way I could open up and express myself how I would like to be expressed.
You've heard this word gifted. I'm sure you've heard it many, many times in your life that people are telling you gifted. Does that make you feel special or different?
When people call me gifted, I don't look at it in a negative way, although sometimes people can use it to differentiate. I personally don't let it make me feel negative or make me feel like I'm an outcast. I just take it positively and know that I have something inside of me that I can use to help other people.
When did you begin to discover that special something inside of you?
Well, actually, my parents discovered it when I was about 2 years old, and we were driving down the street, and I was reading the road signs. And they really hadn't been working on my reading skills or anything like that. I guess it was just inside me, I suppose. Of course, at the time, I was in preschool, but I don't think they really...
Do you have any idea how you picked up reading at the age of two if your parents weren't helping you?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm totally speechless on that topic because I just don't know.
What's it going to be like, do you feel, at the age of 14 to go off to college, knowing you're smarter than anyone who's going to appear on this program, so you're smart enough to know that there are pitfalls ahead of you because of your rather tender age relative to other college students? How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm more anxious than nervous. I'm more excited than scared because although I know that there will be pitfalls, I know that even if I were to go to college at the traditional age, there would be pitfalls anyway. And so I feel like I'm ready to encounter those challenges, rather, and I'm ready to see what lies ahead of me and embark upon my future and not be held back any.
I'd like to bring Ellen Winner into the conversation. Ellen, you are a professor of psychology at Boston College and the author of Gifted Children, Myths and Realities. And as you listen to Christian, you smiled with the smile, I think, of recognition and admiration several times. How many Christian Peels are there out there?
Well, you know, there's no clear answer to the question of how many, because it really depends on what area of giftedness you're talking about and how high you set the bar. The higher you set the bar, the more extreme the gift you're talking about, the rarer. But it's kind of like asking how many gifted athletes are there. It depends on what type of athlete and how high you're setting the bar for gifted. But, you know, Christian is, I can tell you, very rare. There aren't a lot of kids like this.
And how can you tell right off?
Well, most kids do not start to read at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And most kids could not possibly get the score that she got on the SATs in 7th grade or 8th grade. But kids who do have very high IQs often learn to read at a very early age without a lot of instruction. One of the children that I studied learned to read at 2, and the way he did it, his mother noticed it and recorded it and told me about it. He asked her to read one particular book to him every day for a week and point to each word as she read, and then he switched to another book, and they did the same thing for a second week, and that was it. After that, he had cracked the code of reading, and he could read anything.
So this was definitely something coming from inside the
Absolutely.
Boy.
Absolutely. It was not one of these flashcards, intensive parental training programs.
Christian, I think some people, you know, there's a sort of desire to know what it's like to be you with the gifts that you had sitting, I don't know, say in the 5th grade or the 6th grade, being ahead of everybody else, obviously. Was it boring? Was it exciting? And how did you keep things in perspective?
Well, at some times it was, I guess you could say boring, although I don't know if that's the right word or not. Sometimes it was hard for me to be myself because I felt like, well, since I'm ahead of everyone else, maybe I should slow down.
Oh, really?
Right. And I knew that that was, deep down inside, I knew that that was not what I was supposed to be doing. I knew that I should not have to slow down to catch up with everyone else.
What did your teachers say about all of this?
Well, some of my teachers accepted me, while others found it a little challenging to accept me. But overall, I think as the year progressed, my teachers began to understand more and more how I was. Mm-hmm. And although I was not like every other student, and some teachers may look at me as being a little challenging to work with, but I don't feel that way. I think it's just how I express myself, and sometimes it's hard for people to understand that, and that's understandable. And I think overall, I was accepted well throughout my grade school career, if you will. And I enjoyed it, but like I said, sometimes it was hard for me to understand, well, why am I done and everyone else is still working? Or
mm-hmm. How were you treated by your friends, other kids?
I guess that's the same as with the teacher. Some of my friends accepted me while others thought I was just goody-two-shoes. And I didn't have that many friends. I never have. And I don't think until I reach into another experience or go into another atmosphere that I never will until I move into a higher intelligence level or am around peers with a higher intelligence level.
Mm-hmm. Ellen Winner, again, the look of recognition was coming across your face as Christian was talking about, I guess, in a sense, isolation.
Yes.
Now she's going to be going off to college with a special situation, but also an environment where there will be a lot of older kids mm-hmm. around. Is that going to be a further isolating?
Well, first of all, it is all of the research on highly gifted children, whether it's gifted in school areas or gifted in music or gifted in the visual arts, shows that these children are more isolated because they have trouble finding others like themselves. So they spend more time alone. They also tend to be more introverted and not mind being alone as much as typical children. Now, Christian is going into a special program, as I understand it, where she'll be with other young people who are very gifted like herself.
Correct.
So you won't be the only 14-year-old amidst a sea of typical 18-year-olds.
Right.
You'll be with other very special 14-year-olds. And I think that that is, if you're going to go to college early, that is definitely the way to do it, to go into a special program. So you will have other kids like yourself.
You know, we see sometimes in the news the 11-year-old going off to Princeton, the 13-year-old goes into Harvard. Is that necessarily a good idea for those kids?
I don't think so. I don't think that faster is necessarily better. I will say, though, that there's no perfect solution mm-hmm. for children who are so extremely bright and don't fit in. Every solution is a compromise. There are some happy stories of kids who have radically accelerated and gone to college early, and there are some not-so-happy stories. I think it's not a necessary. I think if I were going to send a child to college early, I would make sure I sent them to a special program where there were other young, very gifted kids.
You know what else I've wondered? When you see these kids go off, say they went off to college in 1960, 1970, 1980, 1990, is that you never hear from them again. They do not cure cancer.
Right.
They do not put a rocket on the moon necessarily. Where do they go? What contribution? And I realize I'm asking a very general question, and you actually have a series of individuals to talk about. But what happens why are we not hearing about their genius
right.
exploding on the scene in their adulthood?
Well, you know, when we talk about gifted children, typically what we mean is kids who have high IQs who do well in school. Those are kids who are very good at mastering a domain or a discipline that's already been developed by adults. That is a very different skill from the adult genius who changes a domain, who radically alters it, who revolutionizes it. Only a very few gifted children go on to be those major creators. And many major creators weren't even child prodigies, or at least they weren't recognized as child prodigies, because it takes a very special kind of personality, a personality that wants to shake things up, that wants to be different, that wants to revolutionize. So most gifted children end up being successful adults, mm-hmm. but not revolutionary creators.
Christian, have you figured out in any way? I know you're only 14. Although it's somewhat difficult to believe that listening to you, but I know you're only 14. Have you thought about what you want to do when you grow up?
Yes, I have. I know that I want to work in the medical field, and I want to do something to help mankind, whether it's come up with a cure for one of the presently incurable diseases, or whether it's helping someone walk who's never used their legs or no matter what it is, I just know that I want to help people, and whether it's one person or whether it's the whole human race, I want to do something so that someone will say, you know, Christian Peel helped me. I just want to be known as she helped me, and for that I thank her.
In a way, are you looking to take your gift and turn it into a gift for someone else? Or would you be doing this even if you were more average? Would you be seeking something like this even if you were more average?
Yes, of course. I think I would. Of course, I can't say if I were more average that I think the same way, because I don't know. But I know that I just know that I want to help people. And if I can pass my gift on to someone else and have them use it in a different way or in the same way, but enlarge the territory or the domain, as you all said, that they reach, then that would be wonderful. And that's just my goal, to help someone or to help a group of people or to help a population.
Connection listeners, we're discussing exceptionally gifted children. The question, what is the best way to nurture a child who has these talents? And are schools offering these sorts of kids the kind of special help they need? The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm John Donvan, and this is The Connection. We're talking about gifted children, and especially exceptionally gifted kids today. With us on the phone is one shining example, Christian Peel. She is 14, about to skip all of high school and go straight to college from the 8th grade. In the studio with us is Ellen Winner, professor of psychology at Boston College, an expert on exceptional kids. And joining us now from Elmira College is Martha Morlock, who is an assistant professor of developmental psychology with a special interest in extreme giftedness. She teaches a course is called Talents and Intelligences, Exploring the Extremes. And hello, Martha, and welcome. And I'm curious to know, do you have a lot of students signed up for this course? Is this a going area?
Well, thank you, John. Actually, this was the first round for it this semester, and it's a short course, a 6 weeks course, and I had about 20 kids signed up for it, 20 students, and got wonderful evaluations. They were fascinated with the material and really added a lot of wonderful insights to it. So I enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it as well.
Martha, I know that you use a lot of Hollywood movies in the course and that you include the film Good Will Hunting. We've actually pulled an excerpt of a scene in a bar where the character played by Matt Damon, who is a janitor at MIT, is having to deal with a sort of jerky, know-it-all, not especially bright guy in a bar. Let's hear the scene, and then we'd like to get your comment on it.
You're a first-year grad student. You just got finished reading some Marxian historian, Pete Garrison, probably. You're going to be convinced of that till next month when you get to James Lemon. Then you're going to be talking about Gordon Wood, talking about, you know, the pre-revolutionary utopia and the capital-forming effects of military mobilization. Were you going to plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter? See, the sad thing about a guy like you is in 50 years, you're going to start doing some thinking on your own, and you're going to come up with the fact that there are two certainties in life. One, don't do that. And two, you dropped 150 grand on a f***ing education you could have got for $1.50 in late charges at the public library.
Yeah, but I will have a degree, and you'll be serving my kids fries at a drive-thru on our way to a skiing trip.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but at least I won't be unoriginal.
All right, Martha, it was a Hollywood script. It was fiction. Why do you bring it into your course?
Because even though it was fiction, whoever wrote that really knew exceptionally gifted people. This student, the character in the film, is showing that he does think originally, that he has his own ideas, that he doesn't rely on what someone else wrote, that he critically reads and thinks. And on top of that, the part that you didn't show is that he had a deep feeling for his friends, and he was actually protecting them and coming to their defense by standing down this guy who was sort of superficially bright. So that's why I bring it in, because I want them to see the intensity, the passion, the brilliance, the breadth of knowledge, but also the depth of understanding that goes along with this level of intelligence.
So this was not a stereotype. In your mind, this was actually a quite good portrayal of the smart kid, and it's not the stereotype that I know that you and Ellen are concerned about of the geeky kid, the lonely kid, the know-it-all, who, Ellen, you tell me, often leads to these smart kids not having a lot of friends.
Right. That is one of their biggest problems. They're socially isolated. Unless they're in a special classroom or special school with other kids like themselves, they can't find kids to relate to.
And
kids don't like them.
You were used a word over the break in talking about parents. You said these kids' parents are desperate. And often that's the word you hear about kids, parents of kids who have mental handicaps,
right,
in places where there are no services. That the parents of the very bright kids are desperate is fascinating and troubling.
Right. I mean, it might make you think, oh, why are they feeling so sorry for themselves? They have all the luck in the world. They have these prodigies for kids. But in fact, it's extremely stressful to have a child like this, because our society is not set up to educate these kids. And so these parents often cannot find the right option for their kid.
Christian Peel.
I'd like to
Actually, if you don't mind, Martha, I'd like to hear from Christian Peel,
okay,
about that. And how do your parents feel about your gifts? Were they stunned, surprised, uncomfortable, supportive?
They're 100% supportive of me. They've always told me no matter what decision I make, because it was totally up to me whether I decided to go to Mary Baldwin this semester or not. They never forced me. They never said, oh, you're going. No, hands down, no questions asked. They never said that. They were totally supportive of me. But I know that there have been times when they have wondered, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with her? It's like she's just stuck here. And I know in my fifth grade, I actually had to be moved to a different school because I had completed all of the material.
And by what month, by the way?
By half of the year.
Mm.
And if I would get done with my work quickly, I really don't think the teacher understood how to feed a gifted child, because if I would get done with my work quickly, then she would just hand me some more work. And by doing so, I was done by half the year, and so I had to be put in a different school.
Are you an only child?
No, I have two older brothers.
Are they with you in the gifted category?
They are gifted in some areas.
And how your relationship with them? You'll be jumping ahead of them in school, I assume.
No, actually, one of my brothers is 30, and mm-hmm. my other brother is 26. So, in a sense, I kind of live like an only child because they're both out of the house, and they both have families, they both have their own lives. Although our relationship toward each other is excellent, it's wonderful. But
they're proud of you, I assume.
Exactly. But I am the only child at home.
Connection listeners, the number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Nishama, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
That's right.
Thank you. Nishama, please join us.
First of all, let me tell you what Nishama means. My parents had a very good sense of humor. They were very bright people. It's the female Hebrew word for God and for the creativity of God.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
I'm a school teacher, and what I see so many times, and I have a big problem with labels because it makes it hard for kids. I was a gifted kid. I have an older sister who was as well. My parents were as well. It was very much generational within both sides of my family. The resources for kids in the public schools, as Christian is suggesting, are not good. And I work with low-income kids, kids who are often multicultural, multilingual, and the resources for those kids that have gifted abilities, which is how I'd rather look at it, are really not available for those kids because they don't have external economic resources to make them available, and often their parents, new to this country, don't have it either.
Ellen, would you like to comment on that?
I think you've made 3 points. First, about labels, I agree with you. I don't think labels are good. I wish we could get rid of the word gifted, actually. I'd rather talk about kids who are in need of advanced study in particular areas.
Exactly.
But I think the label is here to stay, but I'm not particularly enamored with it. I agree with you completely about the resources being poor. It varies by community, it varies by state, but in general, there are not enough resources to deal with gifted kids.
Let me ask Martha Morlock to follow up on that question. If you're asking a community to provide resources for gifted kids when perhaps there are not enough resources for the kids who need extra help, what kind of a choice does a community have to make there?
I think the trick to that is not making a choice. Each individual is vitally important, and these children are children who need to have to be able to fulfill their potential just as any other child has. I think that in addition to that, if you want to be very self-serving about it, as a society we can't really afford to allow these people who can contribute, make a major impact on our society for good or for ill, to just wing their way through.
Nishama, thank you very much for your call. Dan Sheridan is now on the line. Dan?
Yeah, hi, John.
Hi.
I did a story for Boston Magazine in 99, looking at the Boston area and how the schools work with very bright kids. And what I found is that they don't. Even in the best towns, the best suburbs, the best schools, there's very little for very smart kids. Forget about poor towns completely. If you're bright, very bright, in the ghetto or in a poor town, you get nothing. But even in a Winchester or a Wellesley, rich towns, these kids get shortchanged.
So, Ellen, what happens to those kids? If they're not getting the stimulation, what happens to the spark?
Well, see, the...
I'd like to hear Ellen answer that one.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, I think that it's a real problem. I think that some of them start to underachieve. They get bored with school, and they tune out. So there are a lot of kids who are not fulfilling their potential.
Exactly.
But you're right. There's very little that's done for them. The typical thing that's done in elementary school is a pull-out program where they get pulled out of the classroom and they go to a special resource room, maybe a few hours a week, and they're with other kids like themselves. But then they go right back to the regular curriculum. And you don't even find those pull-out programs in all communities. For instance, it's all local. It's all done by particular school communities. They make the decision. There's no centralized policy.
Thank you for your call, Dan. Martha, I want to ask you, if you are the parent then of a child in a community where you don't think the resources are being applied correctly for your kid because your kid is so gifted, what are your options? What do you do?
Well, you can work with the school system and try desperately to get things changed. Work with the individual teacher. That's very important. If you have a teacher who's receptive and responsive, that's probably the most important thing you can have.
And you go to the teacher and you say what, or you ask for what?
You explain the situation with your child and you ask for, sometimes parents can help out at home. They can work with the teacher. They can bring in resources. They can say, this is what, oftentimes the teacher doesn't see what the child is capable of doing because the child can't demonstrate it within the confines of what's asked for in the classroom.
Do teachers not, though, hear from plenty of parents who say, I've got a really bright kid and he's bored and he's slowed down and maybe the kid isn't as bright as the parent thinks or hopes or dreams?
Well, certainly that can be possible. That's a different situation entirely, but it all boils down to communication with the teacher. And if you can't get anywhere with that, then there's homeschooling.
What should be happening at home, Ellen, if a parent discovers, you know, that moment that Christian's parents had where she's reading the street signs at the age of two driving by? Mm-hmm. Does this actually strike fear into some parents, or is this a moment of pride and amazement, or is it all wrapped up into one?
I think it strikes fear and amazement. I think parents are very proud, but I think they're also very scared because they don't know quite what to do. So they don't know what resources to provide. I mean, I think what parents should be doing with children like this is enabling them, enabling their gift to develop. So helping it to develop, not standing in the way, not saying, you have to go out and play and have a normal childhood, stop reading.
You know? Right. Can I jump in?
Yes, please do, Christian.
Okay, a few minutes ago we were talking about the teachers, how the teachers have to be sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel, you know, this may be a crazy idea, but I feel if a teacher is going through the educational process of becoming an educator, then sometime during that process they should be taught how to be sensitive and how to be receptive to the needs of a gifted student and how to recognize a gifted student. And also, in that same light, how to recognize the needs of someone who may need more help than normal.
Boy, you sure do play it fair. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Kate, hello.
Hi, this is Kate Windsor. I'm the head of the SAGE School in Foxborough, Massachusetts. I've actually met with Dr. Morlock before, and she's done some work with us. And the program we have, our school, the mission of our school is to serve academically gifted children. And we think we have a very special program because we are grouping all gifted children together, so it normalizes their experience
socially. What does that mean in concrete terms? If a kid's in that school, what does he get that's different from your average public school?
Well, we're grouping children instructionally according to their ability as opposed to chronologically. So typically, children are placed in classrooms. Say all six-year-olds are placed in a first-grade classroom,
right,
and they get the same curriculum because they're 6 years old.
So in your school, you might have a six-year-old and a nine-year-old and an eight-year-old all in the same room?
In the same instructional group, exactly.
For every subject? For example, would they be moved for physical education? Might you then mix the ages again in a different way?
We do that for our academic subjects, so mm-hmm. for math, science, language arts, social studies and science, those programs. We do not do it as much in terms of our specials, so for music, art, and PE, because our focus is really on academic giftedness. And the thing that I think is interesting to note is that putting children with other gifted children makes them feel like they're able to be normal or be their age. And for many of these children, socially and emotionally, they are their age, even though academically they're able to do much more.
Ellen Winter, what do you think of this approach?
I think the Sage School, from everything that I've heard about it, is wonderful. I just wish there were more schools like this, and I wish that there were some publicly supported schools like this so that it was available for children who couldn't pay tuition. But I think we need more schools like this. I think it makes people angry. They think it's elitist. But all the research shows that if you take these kids who are way, way above the other kids and pull them out and educate them separately, that it does not hurt the kids who are left behind. And often it actually is bad for kids to see kids who are so much ahead of them, makes them feel inadequate. So.
And Professor Morlock, I think I heard you making the argument before that everybody would be better off if these kids get to develop to their full potential, because maybe, you didn't exactly say this, but I think you're hinting maybe the cure for cancer is out there somewhere in somebody's head.
Well, that's true, too, but I don't like to place too much emphasis on, you know, what they can accomplish later. I want to place emphasis on what their needs are now because they are children,
right.
And that's what we should do. And too often, that argument gets turned around because people feel very competitive. You know, well, what's my kid, chopped liver? And I don't like to arouse those kinds of sentiments.
Exactly. Not make the kid into a specimen. Thank you, Kate, for your call. Christian, do you ever feel that way, that you're being labeled and gawked at and admired in ways that maybe you don't necessarily invite?
Sometimes I feel that way, but I have to remember that I can't take those things negatively, and I can't let them turn me around. Although I have let them hurt me before, I've come to the realization that, as I said earlier, you have something inside of you. You need to nurture it, and you need to talk to your parents, and you need to talk to your teachers. You need to talk to those in authority over you and tell them how you feel so that they can place you in an atmosphere where that something inside of you can be nurtured and fed, and so it can grow into, later on in life, something huge and something that will change society.
Christian, we just heard Martha say that, you know, you are children, people in this category. Are you a kid? As you know, basically, bottom line, do you feel like you're a kid?
I'm a teenager.
Okay. You taught me a lesson on that one. What do you do in your spare time? How do you entertain yourself?
I like to read a lot. I definitely like to read. I like to play games on the computer. I enjoy playing games on the computer. And I enjoy going outside and playing hide-and-go-seek with the kids from my neighborhood. I like going outside and playing tag with the kids from my neighborhood. I like doing my once-a-month babysitting job. I enjoy volunteering at the YMCA. I do everything that, or in my spare time, I do hobbies that, if you will, the normal teenager would do. But when it comes to academics, I suppose, that's where people differentiate.
The number to call here is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Connection listeners, the question is, the gifted children, how do we find the resources? How should they be handled? The number to call again, 1-800-423-8255, and you're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm John Donvan. This is the Exceptionally Gifted Child Connection. Our guests today are Christian Peel, who is skipping high school and going straight on to college. She is 14 years old, just turned 14. Ellen Winter, professor of psychology at Boston College. And Martha Morlock, assistant professor of developmental psychology at Elmira College in Elmira, New York. They may be only one in a million as profoundly gifted children and one in 100,000 exceptionally gifted, but popular culture is full of references to really bright children. And not all of these references are kind. Just last weekend on the new HBO show, 6 Feet Under, there was a scene where the character Brenda is confronting her boyfriend. She has found out that she was a whiz kid, and he found out because he discovered the book that had been written about her. Here's the scene.
I'm 6 years old. I score through the roof on some standardized, culturally biased test, and it all becomes about them. They hand me over to strangers, experts, a bunch of academic fucks who scrutinize everything I did or said or thought even. It is a fucking law of physics that the very act of observation changes that which is being observed. And now you're going to read that book and think that you know me.
Ellen Winters some anger. Is that anger? And does that anger at academics like you? Is that something you recognize?
I think that what we're hearing there is a young person who is angry at being treated as a geek, treated as odd, treated as different because she scored high. And I don't think that we treat our extremely gifted kids very well because they are threatening. And so people
are... Why are they threatening?
Well, first of all, teachers get very little training in how to teach gifted children. So these are some... What do you do when you're teaching a kid who may be actually brighter than you are? That's a little bit scary. And I think that we don't like to think of people as smarter than us. And so it's a little threatening to our self-esteem.
Can you give us some perspective on the degrees of intelligence and achievement that we're talking about? We just were referring to ratios rather symbolically as 1 in a million or 1 in 100,000. But, you know, every school is going to have brighter kids who aren't necessarily in the category that Christian Peale is. Are they getting... Are there a lot of them, and are they sufficient in number so that school systems are attending to their needs?
Well, actually, I think that in the United States, those kids are also not being well served. And one of the pieces of evidence for this is if you look at the international comparisons on how our children are doing versus European children or East Asian children, and American kids are scoring lower, and that's including the top scoring kids. They're scoring lower than the top scoring kids in other countries. So our schools are probably a lot less rigorous than some European countries' schools and East Asian schools. So I think that if our schools were more rigorous, the bright kids, not the super high IQ, but the moderately gifted kids, would be better served. Because right now they're bored in most schools.
The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Leah is on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Leah. You can go ahead.
Yes, hi. Leah, actually.
Excuse me.
I have three kids in elementary school now, and a couple of them are, as you just described, kids who in some subjects do work several grades ahead, not all subjects. And the typical way that their teachers have dealt with this is to say, oh, well, one of the things we can do with kids who are very quick academically is when they're done with what they're doing, have them teach the other children who are not not going as quickly. And this is a solution which drives me mad. I don't think children should have to be teachers, and I think I think there has to be a better solution for them. I don't have a desire to segregate my kids into another school into a special school.
Right.
And I understand why you don't want to necessarily track kids, but I'd like to hear what specific suggestions are for teachers.
Martha, have you heard of this happening a lot?
Oh, yes. It's very frequent.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And I certainly feel that to a small extent, perhaps, you know, the children can help other kids, but generally, I believe Leah is quite right, that the school is there to help each child foster their development and see that they reach, you know, their optimum, hopefully. And you can't do that if you're constantly being used as a teacher's aide. So these children should have their own curriculum and their own goals and so forth.
Leah, thank you for your call. Nita is now on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm wondering, Ellen, whether you think the concept of gifted is reified, and specifically, research in neurobiology suggests that the brains of young children develop only with appropriate stimulation, so that, in other words, our brains are molded by what we're exposed to and how we use them. Doesn't this suggest, then, with the right stimulation, that you could have a lot more gifted children?
Well, first of all, I don't think that giftedness is entirely a product of stimulation. There are those who would argue that, but I believe that the very early age at which you see signs of extreme giftedness suggests that there is a biological basis to giftedness. That doesn't mean that the environment doesn't play an important role. The environment can kill giftedness if you don't stimulate it, and it can also nurture it. You can also take a perfectly typical child and give them a very stimulating environment and help that child to fulfill his or her potential. But I don't think you're going to make that child into a highly gifted child if he's not born that way.
Thank you for your call, Nita. Nancy, calling from Westerly, Rhode Island.
Hi,
Nancy.
I'm really enjoying listening to this while I'm sitting here on the phone. It's exciting. And I have a 17-year-old who just started part-time college last year. And that's been great. And he's going full-time this year coming up. But, you know, he decided to take it a little at a time and sort of get used to the idea at 16. He's gifted in the visual arts, so we decided to just skip the whole school thing, and we've been educating him at home since he was five.
Do you feel that you have that you're equipped to teach him, especially given how gifted he is?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sort of come from the same background, and my college education was in the arts. Mm-hmm. And we've used tutoring and, you know, all different kinds of...
And how has he done?
Very well. And we haven't actually bothered to tell him, you know, oh, you're gifted or do test scores and all this. Just you're who you are. Enjoy that. Find what it is you need. Going to college early isn't about finishing by a particular date or anything. It's just about getting something that you need. Like I said, he's into visual arts, so he's taking classes in computer design and web design. And, and I'll just close by telling you a funny thing that happened when he was five, which set us up for the whole next 12 years of education. When he was five, he took a class at a large museum where we were living, an art museum, and they did some color copy stuff on the computer. And the teacher took his work and chopped it up and re-put it back together a way that she liked, and they had a little show at the end of this stretch of classes, and we, you know, all the parents were invited to come see what the kids did, and he was so angry that he stormed out of the museum saying, waving his arms at five and saying, what's the big deal about art anyway? It's just a bunch of stuff on paper. And he went storming away, and we said, we better look into this a little deeper.
Well, Nancy, thank you very much for your call. Jay is calling from Darlington, South Carolina.
Hello.
Hello, Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, wow. This is my first time on national radio.
Congratulations.
I was...
Be good. Be very good.
I went to a specialized high school, a residential high school.
Uh-huh.
So I guess maybe I'm like kind of one of the kids that you guys are talking about.
Oh, okay. So you're you've had the experience, and in a sense, Christian is going to have this experience. What was it like for you?
Well, first of all, I learned that I wasn't the smartest guy on the planet.
Oh. Was that a hard discovery to make?
Well, kind of, but it's kind of like pulling a Band-Aid off. You know, like it's so much more is out there after that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, the axiom is true that you can't know everything. Nobody can know everything. So that's what I learned, mainly. But now I'm not the kind that skipped high school or anything. I'm not that smart. I'm kind of that next level down.
Christian, you're now going to be joining other very smart kids at Mary Baldwin College. Have you met somebody smarter than yourself, ever?
Yes. When I first went up to Mary Baldwin, they gave me the opportunity to spend the night and meet all of the girls there in the program for the exceptionally gifted, which is the early admissions program. And the night that I stayed there, it was just... I mean, I don't even have words to explain the experience.
For once, you don't have words, huh?
I know.
That's a relief. Go ahead. I'm just kidding with
that's
you.
That's fine. I mean, it was amazing. The girls there are so wonderful. They're so intelligent. I mean, in every aspect, academically, they're intelligent.
And what did it feel like to be in that company at last?
It felt wonderful. It was like taking a deep breath and it's saying, "Oh yeah, this is where I want to be." It was an awesome experience. And I mean, they're all. I tell everyone. I was like. On the lowest level of intelligence there, they're just all so smart, but they're so down to earth as well. It's not like they kick me out and say, you're not smart enough. They recognize that I have that potential too, and instead of turning me away, they see that and nurture that, and that's why the program is so wonderful.
Christian, I understand that you have an interesting email address.
Yes.
You want to share it with us? Or?
It's Luminosity Gal.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose that name because I knew that I know that I shine like a bright star, and I knew that I wanted my email address, or I wanted the screen name that people recognize me by, to portray that as well. And so I chose luminosity from the root word luminous. Mm. And, of course, I'm a girl, and so I just put gal at the end, and that's how I came up with luminosity gal.
That's quite beautiful. Ellen, Christian is so self-aware. Is that typical?
I think she may be more self-aware. She may be atypically self-aware. Uh-huh. I think, Christian, you've obviously have a very supportive family, and they've been able to find an educational solution for you. So you've had a very positive experience. I think there are many children or teenagers who are extremely bright, extremely gifted, who haven't had such positive experiences. So I think you're very fortunate, and I think you're very self-aware. It's very interesting to hear you talk because you really have reflected a lot about your abilities and how you feel.
Martha Morlock, what advice do you have for Christian Peel as she heads off to college at the age of 14?
Well, I would say that she's got a very good start already, and keep in touch with herself and where she feels that she's going, her own interests and so on. I agree with Ellen that sounds like she has a very supportive family, and I'm sure that they're going to continue to be supportive. She's going to a terrific school, and I think she knows her way already. There's not much else.
Are there any pitfalls for her ahead?
Well, the pitfalls could be that I think in the position she's going to be in, there are probably fewer pitfalls than in other places. Sometimes these students are so aware of things in the world that might be wrong or need to be changed that they can hurt for all kinds of things, not only in their own lives but in the lives of others. And so it's important for other people to be supportive of them and to help them through those kinds of awarenesses.
Ellen Winner, the same question. What advice do you have for Christian?
Well, I think sometimes people have very high expectations for such kids, and they may be sometimes hard to meet. So I would say you don't have to feel that you're going to be a failure if you don't discover a cure for cancer.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, follow your own interests.
And Ellen, I'm sorry, Christian, what advice do you have for two experts who study kids like you?
Well, listening to them talk and listening to their views, they're actually wonderful, and I'm so glad that I finally come in contact with two professionals who don't put this label on children who have intellectual abilities and who are allowing the children to be who they are and express themselves in whatever area of intellectual ability that they might have. And I would just give them the advice to be open to what children say and open to their feelings and continue to allow them to express themselves as they do.
Christian Peel, good luck in college. I want to thank our guests. You're welcome.
Thank you both.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our guests, Ellen Winner, professor of psychology at Boston College and the author of Gifted Children, Myths and Realities, 14-year-old Christian Peel, who is on her way to college this fall, and Martha Morlock, an assistant professor of developmental psychology at Elmira College. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation in our online forums. Check them out at theconnection.org. I'm John Donvan. This is The Connection.